Welcome to the Human Capital Lab podcast, where learning transforms work and lives. Hosted by Executive Director Rich Douglas, we explore how education and innovation create opportunities to drive impact in the field of talent development. Get ready. Today's episode starts now.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another podcast from the Human Capital Lab of Bellevue University. I'm Dr. Rich Douglas. I'm your host. Today, I have Chris Taylor, and we're going to be talking about some things related to talent development that I think are really important to all of us. Chris is reaching us from Toronto, Canada. So welcome, stranger from a strange land.
Thank you kindly, Rich.
And boy, with the things that have been going on in politics the last few months, stranger indeed. But we really are two brothers from another mother. So no doubt about that. And so, Chris, I want to thank you for your patience and your time for coming on the broadcast. Would you please tell people about yourself, about your background, your business, and the kinds of things that you want to talk to our audience about today, which is filled with talent developers and human capital leaders.
Amazing. Well, thank you for the intro, and I'm really delighted to be here. Yeah, I mean, a little bit about me. So I've been playing sort of tangentially in the space of people development for the last 20 years. I run a company called Actionable.co, and I am borderline, my wife would question the word borderline, obsessed with how we turn ideas into action. How do we go from I'm inspired to I'm actually changed through this? You can call it learning transfer. You can call it transformation. You can call it change management. But really, it's around how do we help people take ideas and put them into practice? So we do that through Actionable. And I'm just personally playing in that space for a long time now as well.
So Actionable is a consulting approach, isn't it? I mean, who are your clients?
Yeah. So we're sensibly a technology with sort of a methodology layer on top. So we work mostly with boutique training and consulting firms, also some of the global leadership development companies that you would know the names of, and a little bit with in-house teams as well. But we built a tech that helps participants that are in a corporate learning program take the thing that they're most inspired by in the session, turn it into a daily practice, then keep them accountable to executing on that. Through the dual purpose lens, one, it's to help the participant because we all have great intentions at the end of a learning session, but then life happens and how do we sort of stay on top of those intentions, like a New Year's Eve resolution. And then the second is for the folks that are delivering the training or buying the training to be able to see the impact that training is driving. You know, the holy grail of ROI on corporate training is tough, and we can get into why that is. Actionable plays a role in turning on the lights so we can see what impact those trainings are delivering and then connect it to business impact on the other side.
You know, you mentioned the term holy grail, no doubt. You know, come on, we've all been through training. I've been a trainer for 40 years. You know, you get them for a week, let's say, and wow, you dazzle them. You know, love being up in front, love, you know, it's the performance art, right?
Yep.
And you engage people and you feel like you're really making an impact. Now, Friday afternoon, they quickly rush through the evaluation. You hand out some certificates. They take their white binder. They go back to their office. They throw it on the shelf. Monday morning, bam, back in the salt mines.
Yep.
Doing what's now, how do we break this cycle? Stickiness sounds like it's a concept behind this idea of bringing it into the workplace and changing performance. Tell us more about that.
Yeah. Well, I think, you described it so perfectly. And as a guy who's been in the room many times, I call it the facilitator high, right? It's that moment usually around 2/3 of the way through the program where they just start clicking, right? Like the audio, you can see the light bulbs going off. You can see them. Even Barry, who was in the back of the room with his arms crossed, is like leaning forward a little bit and they're getting it. And they have this great, on varying degrees, desire to be different when they go back. But things start to fall down, Rich, before they even leave the room, because we get them to make these commitments to what they're going to do differently, right? Mm-hmm. And far too often, I see those commitments being things like, I'm going to be a better listener. I'm going to be a better leader. I'm going to be. And the challenge, of course, is that we don't just flip a switch and become something. We become through incremental change. And so piece one on making learning stick is to actually help people to translate their good intention statement of I'm going to become this thing to the daily practice, the thing they're going to do. And the language that I love around this comes from Michael Bungay Stanier's book, The Coaching Habit, where he talks about the new habit formula. The research is not his. It comes from BJ Fogg, and it's been replicated through Charles Duhigg and others. James Clear, anyone basically who's written a book with the word habits in the title, talks about the same stuff. but it's how do we turn it into something laughably small? So when this happens, instead of doing this thing, I'm going to do this new thing. And here's why it matters to me. So step one on making learning stick is to help learners translate intention into a daily practice. Step two is to surround them with the support system that makes it easier for them to stay on the track of change than to abandon it. And step three is to provide an opportunity for them to reconnect on their progress after the session or the program is complete. Far too often, and you alluded to this, right? The white binder goes on the shelf for the participant. And for the L&D lead, they check the box and they're on to the next program because that thing is now complete.
Yeah.
My encouragement is to reframe what complete looks like on a learning program from we've delivered the content to we've realized the change. And that's a different time horizon. Lots in there.
You know, Clear in his book, Atomic Habits, really talks about substituting old habits for new. And in my world, sociologists talk about agency and structure. The structure is whatever social structure we're in. Work is a classic example of that. Or we're in a social structure. Heck, we even put it on the chart. We call it an org chart. But agency is the individual's ability to act.
Yep.
We put them through these learning experiences. And you're right. They get charged up. They get excited about, all right, you know, I'm going to do things differently.
Yep.
But then they get back there into their environment and all these other pressures come to bear, the same pressures that cause them to perform in a certain way to begin with, because these aren't blank slates. These are people with, you know, experience and skills and capabilities and all the wonderments of humans.
Yeah.
And yet the system just molds them. So how do we break through this to help people form these new, we can call them habits or whatever, but these new ways of performing? How do they overcome the system's desire to reshape them back into the way they were?
Yeah, I'm so glad you brought this up because I think there's, you know, this often gets talked about, right? The individual agency, as you say, and then the organizational system that they operate within. And what I encourage listeners to consider is that the organizational system that they operate within is not singular and homogenous. We can create a small, if you imagine sort of, you know, we put the person who can't breathe underwater into the water, right? They're now drowning. We don't need to drain the whole tank of the water. What we need to do is create a pocket of air around them that allows them to breathe and explore the new work. So this is the way that we can, obviously it's great if we can do sweeping org-wide change. Most of us are not in a position to drive that and it takes years to realize it. And so we want to create that air pocket around each of the learners. And the way that we do that is by loading up their immediate environment, their immediate potential, activating their potential support system so that they are actually a support system. So in a very practical sense, what that means is let's get them partnered up with an accountability partner, someone from the group who's going to consciously choose to be that person's support. They're going to set up a weekly check-in. That's number one. Number two, let's talk as a group before we leave the room around those realities, around what is it going to look like when we try to be different, try to do different when we get back into the workplace. Let's talk about what the pros and cons are around the change. Let's just basically normalize it. I think far too often when we're in the training room, we're in this, now I'm using the same word twice, but we're in this bubble, right, that exists outside of reality. We get back to reality having sort of forgotten that all of these demands happen to us and we've got a toxic boss and all the other things. And then it's very easy because we haven't done sort of the pre-mortem around what's going to kill this. So if we can rewind that and in the classroom, spend more time on the now what and less time on filling them up with extra content, then we increase the probability that they will agree, like sort of a social contract amongst the group, that we're going to work on this together. We're going to fight the system. We're going to act differently and we're going to support each other in that. So accountability buddy from an active sense. That social reinforcement normalization from a sort of passive slash agreement sense. And then the third is to have the, ideally their manager involved and aware, not of what they're working on. Way too often I see that, right? Where it's like, well, we told the manager what they're working on. I'm like, right. So you gave them more noise. Let's talk about why this is advantageous for the manager, for the participants to actually be realizing this, right? Like, let's help the manager find the what's in it for me on that. There's a few more pieces, but that's the prime idea is we don't need to change the whole environment. We just need to create a little space for each individual.
you know, I've been training leaders for 40 years now, since the late 1970s, because like I'm really old. And I can't tell you the number of times I've had participants look at me and say, essentially, hey, Clyde, that sounds great. When's my manager coming through here?
Right.
To take this. And we know that's not going to be the case. So, So you're really describing ways that the individual can go back and help engage their management in what they're attempting to learn, accountability buddy to help them stay on track and just to stay committed to the things they're doing. Yep. I have a question for you. This is out of the blue, so if this catches you by surprise, I apologize. But I'm a professional certified coach, and I'm a big advocate of using coaching in leadership development. 100%. How does coaching go into this, or does it, in terms of being able to help, you know, make things stick and make behavioral change actually happen in the workplace through development?
Yeah, I think anytime a program has budget and foresight enough to include one-on-one coaching, group coaching for the participants between learning sessions, 100%, right? Adopt that. We have the data in the actual platform, which I should probably give a little context on in a sec, makes it very clear. The challenge that we see is that certain clients and certain facilitators get it in their head that we have to have coaching in order for the program to be effective, which means that it, by price definition, those programs only exist for a certain upper echelon of the organization, or they become really time bound because that's all we can afford to do, right? And so coaching is extremely powerful, and it's one additional lever that can help support those participants as they attempt to action this after the fact.
You hit it at something that I want to bring out, and that is that, you know, yes, and I didn't anticipate this, but yes, the pricing involved with coaching makes it sometimes dear, and therefore, as you said, reserved for, you know, where the ROI is going to be most realized, which is at the upper echelons. But there's another problem with this too that I think would interfere with the desire to create stickiness, and that is so many times coaching is bolted on without any real forethought. You know, you kind of hinted at it, and I wanted to bring it out. Oh, yeah, coaching would be a good thing. Okay, but to what end? So I just want to throw those 2 cents in that it can also be misguided, and it can be bolted on without any thinking. Oh, yeah, leadership training, we should put in coaching. And the coach is going, okay, what do I do here? What's my role again?
You've hit a very sensitive point for me there, Rich, because this is, in my view, a huge portion of the L&D industry is bolted on or thrown in. I had this conversation the other day with someone around pick your thought leader, but Pat Lencioni stuff or Stephen Covey or Brené Brown. There's someone reads Brené Brown's book, goes, we need greater vulnerability internally, and they're in a senior leadership role. So they go to L&D and say, let's do a vulnerability program. And L&D goes, okay. And then they go, we should put some coaching on that. And it's just this like ad hoc based on what I want, what I like from a content standpoint. My very strong argument is that no people development program should be deployed until we're clear on what needle we're trying to move in the first place. Why? Like, what's the business case? Like, it's like any other business investment. Why are we making this investment? It's not just because, it's to achieve a particular end. And if we can identify, and for those listening going, here's the question to ask. When someone comes to you, someone internal comes to you saying, hey, we want a program around X. One of the most effective ways to go down the right path here is to say, cool, so it sounds like you want a leadership program around blah, just parroting back what they said. Just so I'm clear, is the purpose of this program to deliver content, or are we trying to drive change? And stop talking. And what will happen 9 times out of 10 is they'll go, no, of course, it's to drive change. Awesome. It's been explicitly stated now. And it invites the conversation then around, great, what change? And actually to go down the path of what outcomes are we trying to achieve? What behaviors are required in order to get there? And then, and this is all coming back to coaching, Rich, but you got me on my soapbox and I can't get down now.
Is
to say, once we've identified the business impact we're trying to drive and the behaviors required to get there, now it is everyone's imperative to get those behaviors changed as efficiently and as effectively as possible, which means what's the least amount of content that we could provide in the most time efficient manner for people to understand how to change. How to change is not, we all know that, right? It's like, you want to get in shape, you should work out more, you should stop eating all that junk food, whatever. We know how. We need to go from how to why. And so most programs over-index on how and don't actually allow enough time for the people in the room to turn over for themselves. Why would I care enough to actually enact this, right? Because we're trying to break the status quo of, or we're trying to break the inertia of status quo, which is a big ask. So programs get designed as efficiently as possible around driving that. If coaching is perceived as a vehicle that will help us achieve the change faster, it should go in. If it's not, it should not go in. And this is where the talent development folks have the expertise and the experience to be able to say, these are the pieces that are likely to keep people on track longer and unlock that business value we're trying to create.
So I want to make a distinction around something you just said. And because I'm imagining, as you're, you know, typical, right? When you're listening to somebody, you're going, okay, let me plug that into what I know.
Yeah.
And sometimes, though, we as talent developers kind of just get cornered by senior management and they try to turn us into order takers, you know?
Yep.
Somebody reads a book, or they've heard a podcast, or they've gone and heard something, or that maybe they were talking to a colleague who said, oh yeah, this really cool program. And they come in and go, well, yeah, I want some of that. And that's input focused. And what you're asking people to do is to become output or even outcome focused. Yep. And take their senior leadership there. Okay. And I will caution people, sometimes that senior leadership doesn't want to go to outcome.
Right.
Because it's painful, because then it could poke holes in their cherished little idea. But it's absolutely vital that we do it. But sometimes what senior management hears when you say, okay, what is it we're trying to accomplish here? They hear no.
Right.
And so it's really, I think it's important for us in the talent development world to be effective consultants, to listen for those kinds of things and to not just necessarily take yes for an answer. But on the other hand, you know, there may be ways to coax our internal client, our senior leadership, or whoever's asking us to do these things towards, okay, why? What impact? Am I hearing you correctly? This is what I understand you would get from this. Is this what you want?
Yep.
And those kinds of conversations are absolutely vital, which means to me, you know, we spend so much of our careers either focused on our subject matter expertise, or if you're a, you know, what I would call a pure talent developer, focused on, you know, creating the right, or writing the best learning objectives, or creating the best classroom experience possible. But we need to sometimes step out of that expertise and step into the business savvy of it, and to understand what the heck it is our senior leaders need.
Yep.
What are some other elements of stickiness that you think are important for people to pay attention to?
Yeah, so I want to go there in just a sec. I want to go back, if it's okay with you. This is just forming in my brain, but there's sort of a judo boxing analogy here. Judo versus boxing. The last thing, because there's usually a power dynamic. We can't just say no, right? We're not just blocking the attack that's coming in around this is the stuff we want to do. What we want to do is redirect that energy. And that's the judo thing. And the way that we can do that most effectively is by working to bring it back to the things that matter most to the executive. Because in that moment, the executive is all hot and bothered on Brené Brown stuff. Great. I want to make sure that, yeah, this sounds great. Let's do Brené Brown's program. Like, just agree to start, right? Sounds awesome. There's a whole bunch of different components to that. We can go deep into various areas. I want to make sure that we're not only doing the program, but that it's actually making what you need or want to accomplish more possible. So if you can tie it back, not just to the business priorities, which are somewhat cerebral, but to their personal priorities or mandate, it becomes more emotional for them. They have more what's in it for me in it for them. And so you can, and eventually, and again, there's nothing against Brené, but it may be that Brené's program is not the right program to achieve that objective. But because you've said yes, and you've been able to sort of redirect the energy back into what matters most to them long-term. So that was all I wanted to hit on that.
Judo is a great metaphor for this. Aikido, judo, these are arts that use the momentum and strength of the opponent against them by going with them.
Yeah.
And it sounds counterintuitive, but it's actually very important. Okay, I'm going to tell a little story. For those long-term watch viewers, no, I'm a retired military guy, and I went through basic training, you know, as a grunt when I was 18 years old, and my military training instructor was a black belt in karate. And near the end, we were kind of peppering him with all kinds of questions. And somebody brought up the fact that he was a black belt And they ask the typical question, you know, what's the, you know, what's the most dangerous situation you're ever in? And he said, you know, I was in a bar and apparently I bumped somebody. I didn't realize it was in Austin, Texas. So I was in a bar. I go into the restroom and the guy comes in and he's like, hey, buddy, you know, and I turn around. He's just a foot taller than me. And he says, he's blocking the door. He says, I don't know what to do. I don't want to fight this guy. You know, I just want out of the situation. And we were like, what'd you do? What'd you do? Yeah. Then I reached back. And I reached all the way back. And we're thinking it's some Zen moment, right?
Right.
And I grabbed a chair and I threw it at him. And when he ducked, I ran out the door, grabbed my wife. We ran to the car. We never looked back. Sometimes we as trainers don't need to go and take the boxing mode that you talked about and right. fight. Sometimes, as you said, we can go with the flow and then redirect
yep.
and then help these people. You know, our clients, our internal clients, they didn't get there because they were dummies. They, generally speaking, they got there because they were talented
yeah. you know,
and they're ambitious and sometimes overly so. When they transfer that talent and ability maybe into our area of expertise.
Right.
But rather than fight that, I'm hearing you say, engage it and then begin to redirect it. Whether it's, you know, this particular area, that there are probably lots of nuances where we can then find out what during that process, find out what they really need.
Yep. And
within that expectation, still direct that.
Yeah. Well, and I think it's picking your battles with that too, right? Like one of the reasons I like the question around, are you looking for content or for change? Is that if they're a senior leader and they're hierarchically, you know, have some influence / direction over us, and they say, I just want Brené Brown's program, then you, I don't know, Brené's going to send me a cease and desist letter after this. Then you go, okay, like, okay, right? Like now at least it's been clearly stated that they're not expecting material business impact off of this.
Mm-hmm.
Fine. Sometimes we just have to do the job. But yeah. to your point, most of the time, they genuinely want impact for the business, ideally aligned with their own motivations. They just don't know how to ask for it. I think this has been the big takeaway for me over the last 6 months is that those not in the L&D function know how to order workshops because that's what they've been doing for 50 years. They don't necessarily know how to ask for behavior change programs that are aligned to driving organizational objectives. Like that's a lot of words and it's amorphous. And so part of our job is to help them see that mm-hmm. they use the word workshop, but what they're really asking for is that change, and there may be a more effective way to achieve it.
Yeah, sometimes it's hard to get them off
yeah.
the idea. And it may not happen overnight. It may be something that, as we build good relationships with our senior leaders, we are able to build trust. And the more yeah. trust we build, the more likely we can get them to move in a direction that maybe they don't see as well as we do, but they believe we do. And they yep. come with us. I want to talk about actionable.
Okay.
This is, for those of you that maybe haven't watched a lot of this podcast, you know, Bellevue University sponsors us. The Human Capital Lab is utterly non-commercial. Nobody pays for anything involved with the lab. So by the way, hint, hint, go to our website at humancapitallab.org and see what else you might like besides the podcast. But more importantly, we are not commerce averse. So much of what our guests are into in terms of what they do for a living can really benefit our audience. Your audience at Actionable, mm-hmm. it's us. You know, could you tell us more about the things that you provide and the why people should pay attention to what you do and how they might want to consider incorporating it into what they're trying to accomplish?
Sure. Yeah, no, I appreciate that. It builds nicely off the point that you were just making around how we build trust over time and that we may not get, you know, the seat at the proverbial table right out of the gate, but we can earn it over time. That's part of why Actionable exists. So we have a technology platform. We worked last year, we had about 1,800 learning programs run through the platform, 700 corporate organizations around the globe. What the tech ostensibly does is turn the lights on towards what behavior change is happening after each learning session that's delivered. People attend the session, they get inspired. We want to capture that inspiration, turn it into a daily practice, as we were talking about earlier. Everything we've been talking about, the tech was built to make it easier.
Okay.
As they leave the room, the participant can choose their accountability partner, they can make their social contract, their coach can be added, their manager can be added. And you create this bubble of oxygen around this. The first time I've used this metaphor, I'm going to use it again. Create this bubble around them that's going to make it easy for them to stay on track around realizing the change they want to make. That's the advantage for the participant. It's the stuff that I already wanted to do, is hard to do when I get back to work. This makes it easier. For the talent development people, they can see who's taking what action, what behavior changes it's leading to, and they can generate reports to bring to the executive team that not only shows the ongoing impact of that session, but it's also organized in language that matters to the executive team. What I mean by that is, far too often we get really caught up in the learning objectives. They make perfect sense in our bubble, but the CEO doesn't know what that means or how it connects to the strategic priorities. And if the CEO doesn't, the CFO is against them. No, there's some wonderful CFOs out there.
No, let's just say that it's a productive form of tension.
I love that. It's exactly what it is. Well, and I think, again, you know, I used to villainize these senior execs, but this is their fiduciary responsibility.
Yeah, they have a responsibility.
Right? It is literally their job. So in order to sort of judo that relationship, we need to show them the behavior changes taking place in language that makes sense to their strategic priorities. So for example, if voluntary turnover has been a problem inside the organization, and you show them a report that says, of the 200 frontline managers, we've got 48% of them, particularly in the Northeast, are working on behaviors that are related to improving employee retention. That becomes interesting. Like, that's now they get that, and they may want to go deeper on that. It creates this beautiful flywheel where once they see that, they want more of that. And so then they want to put it on more programs, or they want to initiate more programs. Particularly in these uncertain times, being able to provide some certainty, some visibility. It's like, will we, won't we become the 51st state? Who knows?
No, I think the United States should become the 11th province, but that's just me.
Hey, no comment here, but I'm far too polite to say that. So that we're bringing impact certainty on the heels of learning programs so that talent people can show the executive team, this is why you continue to invest in your people.
You know, I want to make sure people know how they can reach your company. It's actionable.co.
Correct.
All right. So make sure that you make that distinction, folks, and check that out. Oh, in driving this, go ahead, because I'll be glad to cue mine for a moment. Go for it.
Okay, perfect. What I was going to say is, for folks that are looking, so yeah, we have a commercial model. We work, you know, it's a value exchange for money. We have a toolkit that is sort of a primer on a lot of the pieces we've been talking about, how to have that conversation with the business partner that's coming to you, how to design your programs to maximize for impact, how to support change, and then how to tell the impact story. It's all free. If you go to toolkit.actionable.co, there's a 13 question self-assessment, and then it points you to some trainings. It's me talking for about an hour sliced into small videos that will help you get started on that. toolkit.actionable.co.
toolkit.actionable.co. Definitely check that out. You said something, and I can't let it go. It's really important to our listeners. You know, in this field of learning and development, we talk all the time about learning styles. And I like to curb that language a little bit, usually, to say, you know, yeah, but really we ought to develop in a way that best delivers the results that we're trying to achieve. People are adaptable enough that even if we're not appealing to their favorite learning style, we can certainly get them where they need to be, as long as the content and the quality of what we do is importantly is good. But there's a parallel concept here that you talked about, which is when we have these conversations with our senior leaders, it's really important that we get into the flow of the way they think and the way they receive information. Mm-hmm. Some will want to have conversations, and it doesn't matter how many emails you send, but a 5-minute conversation gets you an okay. Other people want to see detailed analyses. They want to see that you know what you know before they even begin to think about whether they want to go along with your idea. Others still want to hear it in the language of the business. So if you're in the business of building apartment buildings, it might be a really good idea to present things, say, like a project, you know, if that's the language of your organization.
Nice.
And present it in the same way. So when we make these engagements with these senior leaders, we need to take into account the fact that just as there are different learning styles, there are different communication styles and different ways that appeal to them, not just as individuals, but also as the organization. I was a consultant once for a company that they were in the project management systems engineering business. Mm-hmm. At first I was like, I'm not getting through to anybody. So I went off and became a project management professional, a PMP. And as soon as I hung those letters, it didn't matter that it said PhD and MBA and all that. Once I hung PMP behind my name, suddenly I was in, you know, and now they were more primed to listen. So I'm going to use your metaphor, get out of our bubble and get into our organizations and be members of the tribe so that we may be acting as consultants, but we're doing it from within.
Yep.
I want to turn the tables and just see if there's anything else or anything that you want to make sure that our audience hears from you that you wanted to make sure we brought to the table.
I appreciate the invitation. I think, so I'm doing this not 40 years, but 20. So I'm starting to feel the gray hairs.
Get there.
I remain 100% convinced that one of the most effective levers that an organization can pull in achieving their objectives is to develop their people. I don't think there's a more important function long-term than the talent function. And it is a travesty that talent gets treated in a lot of organizations as a second-class citizen, largely because they don't have the evidence, the data that shows the impact that they're creating. I think if you go back, far enough, marketing had a similar thing. It was kind of like this voodoo thing that we did on the side, right? It's like, yeah, influencing people, whatever. But then marketing got data and suddenly marketing gets massive budgets and massive attention from the organization. And I think the same is and should be true for talent. So everything we've been talking about from sort of a nitpicking standpoint comes from this rock solid belief that if we can simply start to turn the lights on and show quantifiably more of the impact of our work, we can assume that senior role that we deserve inside the organization.
And I'll double down on that and say, absolutely, make the case so that it's black and white. And if someone's going to walk away from the facts, then they're going to walk away from the facts.
Sure.
But you've made the case and you put it there. Also, let's not be afraid of the data. We're not talking about complex statistical models or high-level math. Sometimes it's simply a matter of being able to show it in the same flow that the organization uses other forms of information and just to make it compatible with that. So we're not sounding like the weirdos in the ivory tower, coming down and bequeathing our knowledge upon people. No, get in with the tribe, know how it communicates and communicate like it. Yep. So I really appreciate that. I'm going to take just a moment, Chris, before we have any final thoughts, and just remind everybody that, again, this podcast comes from Bellevue University's Human Capital Lab. We are a totally non-commercial, utterly free operation, and we are a virtual community of human capital and talent development practitioners coming together to elevate our game and to elevate the field itself. Feel free to go to the website, humancapitallab.org. You can check us out. We have a fellows program where people can submit papers for consideration for publication, and we will definitely publicize your work and get it out there. And over time, with enough participation, we'll even bequeath titles to folks related to the fellowship. So go check that out. We also have, in addition to the podcast, we have a blog, a current events section called Human Intel. And just something I really want to emphasize, and Chris, you may or may not be interested in bringing your message to this group, but we have a talent development community of practice. And this is where practitioners come together. Sometimes there's a specific topic. Sometimes there's even a specific speaker, like the upcoming one, which by the time this podcast gets published will have come and gone. But we do have specific topics, speakers that come in. But also, it's an opportunity for people just to come and learn from each other and share ideas, a lot of resources. Every time somebody mentions a book, somebody else is like, put that in the chat. There's nothing talent developers want more than to read the next book. So, those are the kinds of things that we do to come together in the community of practice. I just wanted to kind of pump those out there as well and encourage people to consider participating in the Human Capital Lab. And there are many other things that we're doing as well. So we just encourage you to do it. And again, it comes at no expense to anybody who's involved. It's just about elevating our game as practitioners in the field of human capital management, and talent development. Chris, before we go, is there anything you'd like to add?
Only you just sparked with the research papers. So we just started about a year ago, a couple times a year, we publish the aggregate findings from the actionable platform. We sit in a really interesting and fortunate position where we've got quite literally millions of data points around what makes behavior change stick in the workplace. And we publish those for free. I don't have an easy link for you for that, but if you find Chris Taylor Actionable on LinkedIn, you can see them on there. They're totally free. And they'll give you, if you're listening to this going, yeah, this makes sense. I need to focus on business impact and I want to, you know, invest in behavior change, Actionable or otherwise. Those reports will give you some ammunition for that discussion with your exec team, because it shows undeniably the impact of certain support systems.
Typical consultant offering value first. Way to go.
Thank you, sir.
I love that action. Folks, this has been another episode of the Human Capital Lab podcast. Thanks for tuning in today. Chris, seriously, thank you so much. You're so generous with your time and your knowledge, and we really appreciate it. I'd encourage you to go out to actionable.co and check it out. See how that organization might be able to benefit you either in the short term with some of the things that they have to offer, like the information Chris talked about, or perhaps even the long term, where there might be services that support the things that you're trying to accomplish in your organization. Chris from Toronto, thank you so much for joining us today. We really appreciate it.
Likewise. Thanks, Rich.
Thank you for joining us on the Human Capital Lab podcast, a Growth Network podcast production in collaboration with Bellevue University. For more info, visit humancapitallab.org. If you were inspired today, pass the link on to a colleague or friend. Stay tuned for our next episode, and until then, keep learning to unlock the long-term potential of human capital.